We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our creator, not our government. I believe that scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, happy Friday, a Friday of election week. And what a week it has been. So much news going on, and, you know, the utter meltdown of the left, simply with the outright and utter rejection of the extreme leftist policies. And, you know, guess what? A majority of Americans actually want to live in reality. They actually want to have food on their table, money in their pockets, and have the freedom and liberty to actually express our sincerely held religious beliefs without fear of being targeted by the left and by U.S. attorneys and all of the lawfare. I mean, there's just so much to unpack here. But the economy and the border are really, two of the biggest mandates that have been given to the new Trump administration and the new Congress and Senate, this trifecta that now the GOP really has no excuse at all to not get all of these priorities actually accomplished. And if they want to actually fulfill the vote that the American people vested in them, they will get going and use the next couple of months during this transition phase to have a plan to be organized and strategic so that on day one, some of these priorities can be fulfilled. And there's a lot that the executive branch can do unilaterally, obviously, certainly not lawmaking and everything. So hopefully Congress will get together their priorities. But let's talk about the economy and with all of this inflation that has been going on. There are, you know, so many of the economists and the financial experts that say that the U.S. is headed toward a recession. And of course, now the mainstream media is not going to try to shield the Democrat administration that has been in office for the last 4 years and say, oh, you know, don't believe your lying bank account. Like, you're fine. We're fine. We're fine. And so if there is a recession, of course, the mainstream media is going to pin that on Donald Trump. So I think conservatives need to be very clear about what is going on. So what is going on? Let's welcome in Tho Bishop, who is the content director for the Mises Institute. And Tho, you know, where are we at right now just in terms of the economy? Let's start there with, the markets. And I think there's kind of been actually some enthusiasm with a new Trump administration because the economy was great until COVID.
Well, we definitely have seen a few stocks caught up after Tuesday. So definitely there's a lot of hope, a lot of expectation there. But the fundamentals, one of the things that's going to be a difficult challenge going into the White House is that Donald Trump is inheriting a very different situation than he did in 2016. The Obama economy that he inherited was not particularly robust either. It was the response to the recovery from 2008 was historically kind of bad, coming out of a recession and things like that. So it was not in a great spot in 2016. Now, though, it's in many cases, it's much, much worse, particularly when you're looking at interest rates, and which itself is a response to the runaway spending that we saw, particularly during COVID, and just broader global concerns, rising concerns about America's debt and deficits. We're looking at interest rate payments on the national debt being the highest line item on the budget. And so those are going to create new pressures because you're trying to get interest rates whoa, I mean, what we saw the first time around is Donald Trump being very forceful, very, very active, very vocal about wanting low interest rates. Well, you know, they had a half percentage cut earlier this year that actually did not make mortgages go down, for example. The borrowing rate did not go down because of long-term concerns and higher treasury prices. So it's a very difficult, a lot of different components that Donald Trump is inheriting. Those recession concerns are real. That usually that sort of interest rate cut is a sign of a recession coming up. And so Donald Trump is inheriting an even worse economy than he did in 2016. And so hopefully Republicans have they have the political capital to do some of the significant changes that are needed to get the economy on the right path. We shall see if they have the will to do so.
Yeah, do they have the political will? They certainly have the political capital, but you know, if they don't turn things around fairly quickly, then that certainly is not going to be a good indication for the base that you know their priorities are the same as the American people. But to your point, I mean, in 2016, Trump did inherit a very bad economy and turned it around really quickly. I mean, that's one of the things that he is the strongest on. So what are some of the things in the presidential transition that he should be prepared for to implement kind of day one, and then even in the first 100 days that could really show the American people that, you know, he's doing as much as he can for the economy to try to combat this whole leftist narrative that's going to try to pin a recession on him?
Well, I expect a very robust first 100 days like we saw last time. I mean, you know, Trump came in firing away with executive orders and things like that. You know, I think in terms of the short term, you know, I think the rotation of professional staff is going to be very, very important for demonstrating the ability to translate political promises into political action. And plus, I think with that will come new ideas. I think that will show a vibrancy and that we can expect from some executive from the executive branch in that sort of situation. So again, seeing follow through on personnel choices there, not simply the cabinet positions, but further down. You know, what exactly does some of these proposals about Elon Musk and government efficiency and trying to address the spending side of it through looking over the way that's always been done and certain things. I think those are some areas of getting cuts on the margins. Of course, you know, once you start getting into more systemic changes on the spending side, that's going to require legislative action. That's going to require a little bit more controversy. The good thing is that, you know, the first time around, Donald Trump had two very big obstacles as part of the legislative process. He had Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House, who was never a believer of Trump's agenda, who was an obstacle as the head of the Republican coalition in the House of Representatives. And you had John McCain, which helped stop the Obamacare reform and things like that. He will not have those burdens. He'll have a little more wiggle room on the Senate side of things if the trends continue there. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, essentially, there's going to be some elements that executive policy will help. I think the regulatory side, we definitely expect some improvements there. I think that there's going to be some improvements when it comes to energy policy in particular. That has a bigger impact. But ultimately, there's going to need to be follow through on the legislative side as well to really hit at it, because, again, the number one issue is going to be that spending problem, because there's a lot less wiggle room that any politician would have dealing with the debt saturation that we've got right now. So, again, that's going to require both short-term executive actions. I think we'll set the pace for what we can expect for the next 4 years, but having that follow through with the legislative action will be something to truly cement a legacy that can go beyond simply executive order.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Tho Bishop, who's a content director for the Mises Institute, and this is really important in terms of a lasting legacy and lasting priorities to not just have executive action, because, of course, remember that Biden on day one, you know, had something like 36 executive actions that reversed a lot of or at least what he could of the Trump administration's policies. And so if you just have executive action to executive action, then that's, of course, dependent on just the whim of whoever is in the executive branch. And so you want these legislative victories. And also to your point, though, that Speaker Paul Ryan between 2016 and 2018 really was at odds with Donald Trump, did not want to work with him. We saw how that panned out. And I think that that conservatives in general, and at least those priorities and the legislative priorities, are set up a lot better in 2024 because you have Mike Johnson, who presumably will continue as the Speaker of the House, who is very much a Trump supporter. They work well together. They worked well even when he was just a member. And so that relationship, I think, is going to be very different. But we still have the GOP leader in the Senate. That election that is forthcoming, I think it's on November 18th, and that could go, that could cut a couple of different ways. And if there is somebody like perhaps a Senator Mike Lee, you know, or someone who is willing to work with Speaker Johnson and President Trump in terms of those priorities, then you genuinely do have a trifecta, at least, of trying to whip the votes, get everybody on board. You still have some of the problems with the factions and the coalitions among the GOP majority, but it's a lot easier when your leader is saying, you know, hey, get on board, instead of the leader being at odds with the administration. So so how important are those dynamics in terms of some of the specifically economic priorities that conservatives would like to see?
Well, it's going to be very important, of course. Just as important is going to be the margin there, because, you know, there are some, you know, you have your Lisa Murkowski's, right? You have your Senator Collins and the like, so that can you know, not always be in lockstep with the rest of the Republican caucus there. So, you know, that's why, you know, it looks like there might be a pass in Arizona, as slim as it might be there, but the margins for that Senate will also be very, very important, as well as the leadership race there. It's going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out. You know, John Thune, you know, was very close to Mitch McConnell, different personality. I don't think he's going to be, you know, stabbing Republicans a week before election time. So that would be a small improvement in many ways. John Cornyn, someone who I think has a lot of backlash in his own home state of Texas. I think that'd be a very discouraging sign if the Senate went that direction. You will see some of the other options out there that might present itself. You know, I know Rick Scott has talked about running, but, you know, I don't think he had a lot of political capital with his colleagues to achieve that position there. But the Senate's always been, you know, in part by design, the Senate is not supposed to be as reactive to political winds as the House. But, you know, there has been, I think, a very big disconnect between the leadership of Republican leadership in the Senate and where the Republican base is. I think that the Republican base is far more along the lines of Mike Lee, of Rand Paul, you know, of when J.D. Vance was in the Senate, obviously. And I think there's always been a big ideological gap between that group of Republican senators and the leadership of the Republican senators. And so hopefully, even if it is, say, a John Thune, hopefully, particularly given the performance that Trump's agenda had this election cycle, you know, even if it's an older personality, if it is a more traditional senator that is leading the Republican caucus up there, hopefully they will recognize exactly where the base is and is willing to be more deferential to the directions that the Trump administration wants to go and to actually get stuff done rather than being an obstacle to that in the Senate.
Yeah, I think that's spot on analysis. And so, you know, let's talk also about the Fourth Estate and legacy media, which, of course, is going to be generally against Trump. I mean, we've already seen the hysteria this week from, you know, The View has been very entertaining. And, you know, a few of these people who are just like, you know, I can't believe this. And, you know, America is, it's a dark day in America. And I'm thinking, you know, have you not gone to the grocery store recently? Like, you know, what, but, you know, but again, this is just the dramatic worldview difference between the left and the right, and, you know, these social issues versus just, you know, plain traditional rights of Americans and American values in terms of the economy and actually having a sovereign nation, you know, things like that. So in terms of how the media might shape this, how important is this going to be for Trump to be, as he was in his campaign? I mean, in the general election over the last several months, and I've said it here on this program, he has been a lot more disciplined than he was in 2020, I think, and even than he was in the primary, especially. So how important is it going to be for him to remain disciplined and combat that sort of anti-conservative narrative from the legacy media. And I think, you know, with Elon Musk's help, of course, because a lot of people are going to non-traditional sources, you know, like radio, for example, but also on social media, podcasts, and that kind of thing.
You know, I think the reputation of the legacy media has been rightfully destroyed. They have proven themselves, I think, irrelevant in terms of shaping opinion. For a large percentage of the country, based off of the election results that we saw this week. So, you know, what I'm interested in is twofold. One is, what are the differences that can be acted upon so that, just to the same extent to which it was people looking at, you know, the receipts after going to the grocery store that shaped the way that they saw the economy, rather than all the propaganda we got about, oh, this is actually a great recovery. If you look at this chart and you look at this data point, then actually things are looking great, and Americans just need to appreciate how great we have it, right? It's going to be, you know, what are the changes that Americans can see first and foremost with their own eyes? The second part, though, is I'm very interested to see how the administration, as a broader communication strategy, continues what made the campaign so successful going into Tuesday, which is, you know, a very active, very targeted alternative media strategy. Are we going to continue to see, say, J.D. Vance going on podcasts as the vice president talking about the agenda? Are we going to see them, you know, not just simply focus on the traditional Washington press pool, but, you know, doing a lot more almost kind of FDR-style fireside chats? You know, whether or not it's Trump himself, right? The president's schedule is very different than the candidate's schedule. But how active, how targeted is the administration going to be to try to bypass that traditional legacy media, going directly to the voters that put Trump in office this time around? And it's going to be, if they do that, it's going to be a change in the way that the White House operates. I think that could be a very positive thing for you know, politics in general. But I'm very interested to see that aspect of it because, again, as we saw, again, the legacy of the mainstream media, and to a certain extent, the smart ones, I think, are recognizing just how the damage that has happened by their own behavior. But it's not going to fix anytime soon. It's going to be continually hostile no matter what happens the next 4 years. So how they supplement that with a new strategy, I think, will be very interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this as well is going to depend on the people that Trump chooses to put around him and in some of these key positions. And of course, it's going to depend on, you know, the leadership in the House and also, of course, in the Senate. And so this is what we need to be praying for everyone who's listening. You know, I mean, our influence and our participation and our engagement, you know, doesn't end on Election Day. Certainly, we need to make our voice heard. You can always contact your members, tell them, you know, the priorities that you want to see. But we also need to be praying that good people, good Christians and good competent people would populate the Trump administration. We need to pray for our leaders and also that the coalitions of these majorities, of these new majorities, would really have the best possible priorities and a biblical worldview and outlook in terms of how they're shaping a government for America for at least the next 2 years in the short term. So, Tho Bishop, thanks so much, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. preborn.com/AFR.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the all-important policy priorities of the forthcoming Trump administration and what is turning out to be a trifecta of Republican control of the forthcoming Congress, the Senate, and also the White House. And remember, they had that trifecta back in 2016, but there were a lot of personality conflicts and not so much focus on actually doing work for the American people. But it hopefully will be a little different this time. I think that Trump has certainly learned from his first 4 years, and there are also different players in place. And so Speaker Mike Johnson is far more likely to work with a Trump administration priorities than a former Speaker Paul Ryan. And we're still waiting to see what the election of the GOP leader and the majority leader in the U.S. Senate will be. And that's going to determine a lot in terms of those priorities as well. But let's welcome in Walker Wildman, who is, of course, the vice president here at the American Family Association and leads AFA Action. Because for Christians, we need to, of course, engage in policy that is consistent with a biblical worldview. And conservatism and conservative priorities, of course, is derived from our biblical worldview of government and how we engage as citizens in our government and how we can participate in helping the new Congress and Senate and the Trump administration shape those priorities. So, and of course, work still goes on in the states as well. But since we're all talking about the federal level, we'll focus there today. But good morning, Walker, and great to talk with you.
Hey, Jenna, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is really important for conservatives to engage, and I think we'll have a greater opportunity, certainly, as Christians and conservative, policy organizations to engage, I think, a lot more with the Trump administration than we did the Biden-Harris administration, for obvious reasons. So what in your mind are the policies that, at least in the first 100 days, and even in the presidential transition period, but the first 100 days that Christians and specifically AFA Action wants to focus on?
Well, there's a few that come to mind. The first one is the life issue. The FDA under Biden signed off on and fought for mifepristone, which is the abortion pill, in federal court, and ended up winning to a degree at the Supreme Court. So I think we need to reopen that discussion of the FDA signing off on what we know is a very dangerous drug and deadly, in some cases, drug for women. So that needs to be priority number one at the agency level at the FDA, and we need to make it very difficult for that to ever be resurrected. Also, we need to the Trump administration is going to have to do everything that it can through the Department of Health and Human Services, the DOJ, and other agencies to protect minors that are being mutilated by so-called doctors and hospital systems. These are transgender surgeries that are taking place all around the country where 13, 15-year-olds are having their body parts removed and they're becoming sterilized, unable to have children for the rest of their life because of gender dysphoria. So we have so-called medical professionals that are facilitating and participating in these very dangerous, life-changing procedures on minors. So we've got to go after that. All the pro-lifers need to be pardoned. Every pro-lifer that was locked up by Joe Biden needs a full pardoning or sentencing commutation. And also the J6ers, they all need to be let out. But I want, beyond just some of this unraveling of Biden's disastrous 4 years, we need more lasting reform. We need basically a deconstructing of the bureaucratic agencies that are in Washington, D.C., whether we're talking IRS, FCC, FDA, DOJ, all these agencies need to be deconstructed to such a degree that it basically makes it very difficult for a future Democrat president to rebuild the agencies. I mean, we've really got to strip them down from a lot of their power and their overreach that they've developed over the last 50 to 70 years.
Yes, absolutely. I could not agree more. And, you know, this isn't just about having 4 years for executive orders and to reverse some of the executive orders of Biden, because then if, you know, another president comes in from either party that, you know, wants to do damage, then we're just kind of at the mercy of whoever happens to be in power. There needs to be some lasting change, and that needs to come mainly through legislative priorities and, of course, dismantling and defunding the big bureaucratic state. And, you know, Trump in his first term had had talked about and promised, you know, defunding and dismantling things like the Department of Education and, you know, a lot of the bloat in Washington. And, you know, some of the deep state, when he talks about draining the swamp, I mean, these are the bureaucrats in Washington that basically have just full tenure. They're not term limited. This is just their lifetime job. And it's very difficult to get rid of them. With Elon Musk, which I think is such an interesting X factor, I mean, no pun intended, but you know, just an interesting thing for him to come in and want to be part of this new kind of Department of Governmental Efficiency. That to me is a really exciting innovation to say, yeah, we don't need to be funding all of these positions. We can save a lot of money and maybe even just in that pay down some of the national debt, reduce taxes, you know, have all of these other ancillary benefits. How do you see, you know, these people like Elon Musk in that particular department helping shape some of the policies that really could effectively do some of the draining of the swamp?
Yeah, his, you know, having people that are actually business leaders and people who actually know how to run an organization and run a company in the private sector, having them in the administration is going to be critical. So whether it's Elon Musk or anyone else, really winnowing down of what is the federal government is very, very important. And we've got to be aggressive. And I think Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and some of the others, they are speaking aggressively in this topic. But it's not enough just to pause hiring or slightly reduce hiring. We're talking about thousands of people that need to be let go. And I think Elon Musk actually said the other day, we can give them severances. We're not going to put them out in the streets, but we're also not going to commit to continue hiring them. So the reducing of the headcount at the federal level has to be drastic. I mean, it has to be. I've said recently, we really need to kind of be uncomfortable with it. Like, it needs to be like, do we really need to lay off, you know, 50,000 people today? It needs to be aggressive, slightly uncomfortable, unorthodox, radical, whatever you want to call it. There's about a 2-year window of opportunity to get things done. If the Republicans are able to get the House in the next few days, they'll have both chambers. So the window of opportunity is about a 2-year window where President Trump will control both chambers, and he won't be threatened with impeachments and investigations. So that's really his window to get a lot of this work done.
Yeah, and you know, if we've learned anything from the first Trump term, it's how much the left is not just going to go away and allow, you know, a lot of these conservative priorities to just actually, you know, have work done without some of these ways to try to distract and to thwart the genuine progress that that conservatives can make. Because often, Walker, and I'm speaking, of course, with Walker Wildman, who's the vice president here at the American Family Association, often when we talk about conservatism, one of the complaints that some of the more populist people on the right say about conservatism is that we're far too defensive. And so when we just play defense, then we lose ground and we have to go on offense. And I think in some ways they're right about that. But we do have to go on offense in the right ways. We, of course, like the rules and the structure, as we should, because no one should have power over the limited power that our ultimately our highest law of the land provides, and the separation of powers. That's what provides for the confidence that we won't ultimately end up in tyranny. And so when we work within that structure, we still need to advance the ball for conservative priorities. And there is a great opportunity to do that. So how do you see the conservatives, I guess, learn from the lessons of 2016 and maybe be a little bit more prepared to not get distracted by the inevitable nonsense that the left is likely going to throw at conservatives, and particularly Donald Trump in his second term.
Yeah. Well, look, the criticisms of some criticisms by some you know, non-traditional conservatives against conservatives in the evangelical community. I mean, some of those criticisms, you know, hold some weight. The problem that sometimes our movement, our side, deals with, to your point, is really not raising the bar and expecting more of our leaders and leaders in the conservative movement, specifically at this point, the Republican Party. So we're going to have to – I don't want to talk about boring stuff like tax reform. Like if all we're going to talk about is how we need to renew Trump's tax cuts, that's boring, and that's not revolutionary. And so this election was a really a mandate for revolutionary change in D.C., and Lindsey Graham's tweeting about tax cuts and reconciliation with the budget after President Trump won the election. We need to be, like, tweeting about how many federal employees we're going to fire and how many DOJ employees we're going to fire instead of – and how we're going to right the wrong of how the Biden administration forced these experimental shots on our military members and then dishonorably discharged them after they wouldn't take these experimental shots. So there's just so much that has to be done, but we can't lower the bar. We can't expect less and talk about the same old talking points and the same old things that we've been talking about the last 10 years, like repeal and replace Obamacare. That is so like an that's like a 2012 talking point of Mitt Romney. We don't need to be talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare. There's so much more bigger things that have to be done. To your point, we just have to think outside the box, and we have to be unorthodox in our approach of the drastic changes that have to take place in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and drastic, I think, is the mandate, because for Trump to even win the popular vote, I mean, that is huge, and that is just a complete repudiation of the leftist vision for America. And I almost think of this as I've been, you know, kind of thinking this week, you know, since Tuesday and kind of, you know, letting the dust settle a little bit and saying, okay, you know, here we are again. It almost seems like we've done a complete reset. You know, we've turned off America and we're turning her back on again, like just, you know, complete reset to say, okay, we are rejecting what the left wanted to implement with their radical agenda for you know, for this so-called gender affirming care of kids, for their education priorities, for, you know, all of the things that they want to do on the social issues, taking away parental rights, taking away freedom and liberty, transforming natural rights into so-called civil rights, which are really just privileges. And I actually love what our mutual friend, our good friend Steve Dace, posted yesterday. He said this, Walker, to our leftist countrymen anticipating the coming reign of Trumpian terror, I can offer you no words of comfort otherwise. Prepare yourselves for the looming reckoning. For your insolence, we will cut your taxes. For your disobedience, we will secure your borders. For your coercive tyranny, we will make you healthier. For your treachery, police will be dispatched to round up the violent criminals in your blue cities and imprison them. You have been warned. Your time is coming. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. We're going to make America better and stronger, whether you want to come along with it or not, with us or not. Another thing I wanted to comment on that's relevant in the, over the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 days is this election for GOP Senate leader. You know, I was watching John Thune, which is basically a McConnell 2.0, on Fox yesterday, and they were asking him about his run for the Senate leadership position. He's trying to replace McConnell. He and John Cornyn are. They're both running along with Rick Scott out of Florida. And John Thune was repeating the same old traditional Bush-era talking points of expanding our military, improving the economy. I mean, it was the same old talking points, but he said nothing about going after the DOJ, going after these out-of-control agencies, nothing about cutting spending. It was all the same old, you know, status quo talking points of the Republican Party, and that's just not going to cut it. I mean, there's no way it's going to actually hinder a Trump presidency if President Trump endorses John Thune or Cornyn for this Senate GOP leader, we need fresh blood in that position, because that's the McConnell and Trump obviously have not got along very well. But McConnell worked against Trump at every turn when he was, with the exception of the federal judges, McConnell worked against Trump at every turn. So I'm just going to be on the lookout to see who President Trump picks to be that Senate GOP leader, because we need new leadership, and we don't need a McConnell 2.0 in that position.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I hope that Trump is involved more than he has at least projected that he might be, because it is going to be very important to have someone who will work with the conservative priorities in the agenda, because you genuinely need a coalition and not kind of all of this infighting and different views on priorities and all of that. If he, especially with the Senate, if he wants to get his political appointees pushed through in fairly short order, he's going to need the Senate, and especially for the federal judiciary, which coming up, Walker, as well, is I think a really key issue. And I know that the Center for Judicial Integrity has been doing a lot of work on this. Phil Geragy has done excellent work for AFA. And now that, we have a Trump administration and some of the ability to inform the administration on judicial selections, it's interesting that I don't think the Democrats are going to be wanting to pack the court now, surprisingly. I wonder why. But it is possible that there will be Supreme Court vacancies over the next 4 years. So what is AFA doing in terms of our participation in the judicial selections, and not just the Supreme Court? I mean, the entire federal bench matters.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, we love and we appreciate and we need Justice Thomas and Justice Alito. And the reality is, though, that they're likely to retire under a Trump administration. That's really no surprise. That's not breaking news. Both of them are at the point where they've served multiple decades on the Supreme Court, and they're looking for an opportunity to retire and be replaced by a Republican nominee. So we're going to have to keep on the lookout for that. And what I want to warn against is appointing any replacement to a Thomas or to a Alito that is less than, that is not as good as Thomas and Alito. And I know, I understand the bar is really, really high because they're so very good on their rulings and their constitutionality, but we have to keep the bar high and the expectations high. We just can't settle for somebody who's just kind of good, like a Gorsuch or a Kavanaugh. We really have to settle for someone who's the best of the best of the best at the Supreme Court when you're talking about replacing those two. So there just has to be a lot of diligence and a lot of really keeping the bar high when it comes to replacing those two. But there's going to be hundreds of lower court, whether it's district or circuit court positions, that are going to have to be filled. There's actually going to be some vacancies on day one that Biden wasn't able to fill in these courts around the country. So the remaking of the federal judiciary to be more constitutional and more conservative could be another legacy builder for President Trump, but his team's going to really have to be on their A game to make sure we get the best of the best in all of these positions.
Yeah, that is so well said. And, we, especially if it's replacing an Alito or a Thomas, but even, if it's Sotomayor that or Kagan that ends up leaving, we want the best of the best. And we don't want justices who are going to compromise on some of the things that unfortunately we have seen from Trump's previous nominees. And so the vetting process needs to happen. We need to start doing it now so that it's not kind of a, scramble when some of those vacancies occur. And that's why the AFA Action has done so much work in terms of the green list already. And so you can go to AFA Action, online. You can see all of those things and start thinking about that. Start praying now that good decisions would be made and that the future of the judiciary, the future of legislation, all of these priorities and policy determinations, personnel, all of this would be centered and focused on what is genuinely best and biblical and right and moral and upright for America. So, Walker, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for dropping by, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Welcome back. And, you know, even though this has felt like election season for the last, you know, 2 years, practically, and certainly the last several months, we are going in to the Christmas season, which is just the most magical, wonderful time of the year. And this is, of course, our opportunity as an AFA family to participate in the Operation Christmas Child. So now through November 25th, you can send the good news of Jesus Christ to children around the world through a simple shoebox gift. And every shoebox is an opportunity to share the truth about Christ and God's love. So this is a direct way for you to equip the local church around the world and Operation Christmas Child's local ministry partners with a simple shoebox gift to reach their own communities and establish long-term relationships. So if you want to pack your shoebox now, it's any standard size shoebox. Drop it off during the third week of November. This year, that is November 18th through 25th. Shoeboxes will be collected across the country at more than 4,700 drop-off locations. My church here in Florida is participating as well. So visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC to learn more, the best items to pack, and to find a drop-off location near you. So that's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC for Operation Christmas Child. And another way that you can participate, you know, beyond the election and make a lasting impact for policy, for truth, for spreading the truth of the gospel of Christ is participating in the AFA Foundation. And so Chelsea Wildman is here to tell us a little bit more about how you can engage in that. So good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Jenna.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for maybe new listeners or people who, you know, have heard a little bit about the AFA Foundation, but they're, you know, not really sure exactly what it is that you do and how they can participate, tell us a little more.
Yes. So our AFA Foundation, we exist to help donors provide an income for life through our charitable gift annuity that we offer. A charitable gift annuity is simply a gift from you to AFA, and in exchange, you would receive a fixed income for life. That income percentage is based on how old you are at the time that you give the gift, as well as when you start to receive that. So you get a lifetime income, a partial tax deduction the year that you give the gift, as well as partial tax-free income when you start to receive those payments. And then upon your passing, any remaining funds are then given to AFA to continue our ministry and to be able to support us, you know, for years to come. So it's really a win-win. And our team here would love to answer any questions that listeners may have about that.
Yeah, and you can also go to afafoundation.net and you can learn more. You can go to those tabs, how to give, what to give, learn about wills, donor stories, even news, and how to maximize your philanthropic goals. Because especially, you know, I know that so many conservatives and Christians have given a lot to campaigns. They've given to ballot initiatives. I'm so grateful for everyone who helped and participated to defeat the extreme abortion amendment here in the state of Florida. And we have a lot of work to do to hopefully unwind some of those amendments that did unfortunately pass in states around the country. But now that, you know, kind of election season is over, you may be looking at, you know, how can I participate in long-term ministry goals? And AFA Foundation is a great way to do that. So you can go to afafoundation.net. And speaking of those stories, I know, Chelsea, you get to speak to, you know, a lot of our donors. And, you know, what are some of the stories, or, you know, maybe one or two in particular that you find most meaningful to share?
Absolutely. Well, we do get to speak to donors from across the country, and really just listening to how AFA or AFR has impacted their, I mean, we did just get off of election season. So, you know, impacted their voting in different ways, impacted families, and really broken some generational curses that, you know, have been in their family for years. So just getting to hear how the truth of God and God's word impacts families across the nation through AFA and AFR are really some of my favorites. And we have letters and stories every day that we hear. So it's very, very encouraging, God's work that he's doing in lives.
Wow, that is really incredible. And, you know, this is one of the amazing things about AFA as a whole, and one of the reasons I'm so grateful to be part of this ministry is that it is very long term. Because, as I said prior to the election, you know, regardless of what was going to happen on November 5th, which, you know, God knew before the foundation of the world the outcome, we didn't know. We were all trying to predict it, but we didn't know. But regardless of what happened, AFA would continue our mandate, which is to teach the truth of the gospel of Christ and to participate in church ministry. Ministry, family ministry, ministering to families, the truth of the word of God, and also being good citizens and participating in civil government. And that work happens and will continue to happen, you know, regardless of who is in leadership in government, regardless of the direction of America. And we're so grateful for the blessings of liberty that we can continue to do that. That's why your gift is very important to us. I'm so grateful to be part of this ministry and to get up every morning and be able to speak the truth of the Lord and to talk about, you know, the top trending headlines, what's going on in the world of politics and government and civil government from a biblical worldview perspective. And you're not going to hear that from the mainstream media, even the conservative channels. You don't hear the biblical worldview perspective. So what we do and the work that we get to do here, the ministry that we're involved in, is always just so impactful and exciting. And Chelsea, you know, I hear from listeners all the time that they just love the American Family Radio Network. They're so excited to wake up every morning, you know, and turn on the radio and hear encouragement, you know, all the way through the evening. So it is a really great way that we can continue to invest in the next generation, because I know for a lot of donors as well, they're very concerned, perhaps, about the next generation. And so this is a way that they can plan, even after they've gone home to be with the Lord, they can plan to be a part of the next generation, teaching the truth of the gospel of Christ.
Absolutely. Yes, those seeds that we sow now really will impact generations to come. Absolutely. We would love to speak with anyone who's interested. Our phone number at the foundation is 1-800-326-4543. Extension 345. And as far as deadlines for the end of year giving, I know that everybody kind of tries to get those requests into the different, you know, financial institutions and companies. And so the sooner that you start those, you know, start to think about those things, the better. We really, we ask that anyone who is interested in a charitable gift annuity, give us a call. You know, within December, we definitely can send paperwork and get figures to you very quickly, but institutions that you may pull funds from, might have some sooner deadlines. So the sooner that you start thinking about those end-of-year gifts and planning for those, the better.
Yeah, that is such a great point. I mean, you know, we're already midway through November, which is really incredible. And so the sooner you start planning, then you can get that done, especially, you know, before the Christmas season, so that you can get that done and then, you know, go plan what you're going to fill your Operation Christmas Child shoebox with. So, you know, you can get this done. And so you can call that phone number, and you can also go to afafoundation.net and learn more. So, Chelsea, I so appreciate you dropping by. And you know, what are kind of the end of year goals for the foundation?
Well, really just to help as many folks put a charitable gift annuity in place and into their portfolio as possible. We really like to recommend that around 10% of someone's overall portfolio be in a charitable gift annuity. That's a really great kind of starting point. So if anyone has a question about that, that's a great starting point, and they can kind of go from there. But again, it will give them lifetime income as well as support the work of AFA and AFR for generations to come. Jenna, thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chelsea Wildman. Really appreciate it so much. And again, you can go to afafoundation.net. And thank you so much to all of our listeners who are donors, who give in many different ways to this ministry, and also who pray for this ministry, who pray for you know, everyone who's here, our hosts, our staff, our leadership, our board, everybody here, because we want to continue in the things of the Lord to teach the truth of the gospel of Christ. And this ministry has just been such a great blessing in my life. life. And I love it here, and I'm so grateful for all of you that I get to hear from every day who find it a blessing in your lives as well. So thanks so much. You can always reach me and my team at jenna@afr.net, and I'll see you Monday. But don't forget the podcast too. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.